So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Craig Bolanos is the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com. Let's invest a little time with Craig. Welcome back, Craig. How are you?
John, good to be back on your show. And that was one heck of a positive quarter, given all the tumultuous headlines we've had. It was nice to close out March 31st on a big rally.
What was the number? What was we were up what?
Well, I mean, we had that big rally on Friday, but if people really take a look at it, they might have missed it. I mean, the S&P 500 is up roughly 7% for the first 3 months of the year, and I think that's catching an awful lot of people offsides who thought the world might just be coming to an end in the early part of 2023. I mean, after all, we did have the worst banking and financial crisis that we've seen in the last 15 years, so who wouldn't be guilty of thinking exactly that?
But we kind of fell off a cliff there for a few days last week, didn't we? Didn't it dip quite a bit? Do I remember that right?
So if you're talking about last week's trading action, I mean, by and large, last week's trading action felt pretty darn good all the way through. For those who are looking at the Dow, those who are looking at the S&P 500, I don't remember going off a cliff at all last week, but I definitely remember in the month of March, I remember a Dow Jones Industrial Average that quickly plummeted from some 33,000 and change all the way down to 31,000. That didn't feel good when we heard about the big three, in particular Silicon Valley Bank, coming unglued. So that was newsworthy last month.
Yeah, maybe I had my timing wrong, but yeah, I thought we were kind of in a downward spiral, and yet you're telling me that on the S&P for the year, we're up 7%.
You got it.
Wow. That's probably the more important of the three compared to the NASDAQ or the Dow. I mean, if you had to hope for, if you want to go look at your 401ks, probably the S&P is a better predictor of how they're performing?
I think it's certainly a better predicator as to the general direction of the market. I mean, the Dow, after all, only has 30 components in it. And just for comparison's sake, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was positive, but it only eked out a positive advance of 0.4%. S&P up 7. 7's a lot more than 0.4%. But last year's loser, which is the NASDAQ, down in a significant way, the NASDAQ rallied 16% to end.
I wonder if people then are saying, well, I can get 4% or 5% in a T-bill or an I-bond, but actually, if the S&P is outperforming it for the year, you know, this is a conversation we've had with Terry Savage and you and several of our guests over the last several months, is that when those rates went up, at least some of those products became more attractive. But you might have been betting against a better performance in these markets. And in the first quarter, you're telling me that's what we saw.
That's exactly what we saw. And the debate about whether the glass is half full or whether the glass is half empty is going to continue to rage. But I've got great news for everybody who's already retired or those who are on the cusp of retirement. People's ability to get retired and stay retired, I think, is dramatically improved for those that want to follow safe money solutions because of these generous interest rates, which we are now blessed with. Money markets are paying real interest. CDs are paying real interest. Treasury bills are paying better. And of course, all forms of bonds are certainly doing better than treasuries. And that allows people to lean into the safe money of their portfolio with a little bit more permanence and definition. And I think that's good in this yield-starved environment that we've lived in for the last 15, 16 years.
We're talking to Craig Bolanos, co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group, and he was talking about the safe money strategy, which I guess, just to expand on that a little bit, is putting money in some of these guaranteed products. Is that right, Craig?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, John, together we've talked on your radio program and time again that everybody's been investing with an acronym, which was TINA. And TINA, of course, stood for there is no alternative. I think those that wanted yield, those who wanted interest, had to seek high-quality dividend companies and be creative for the last decade and a half. But TINA is no more. TINA has been replaced with a different acronym, TIARA. And if we spell that out now, there is a real alternative, because Treasury bills that used to be under 1, now they're all under 4. Bond portfolios that all used to be under 2, now they're 4 to 5. So all of a sudden, in this new world of TIARA, people can get more certainty, more permanence, more definition. And I think for the typical 60-40 balance portfolio, that's good news for investors all across America.
Well, the 60-40 balance was used the equities and bonds, but these are T-bills or I guess I-bonds you're talking about. So would you say 60-40 is the right mix?
You know, everyone wants to say the 60-40 portfolio is dead. Everyone wants to write it off after one bad year. But there's got to be a reason that 60-40 portfolio has been a bellwether, a staple, not just of individual investors, but institutional investors for decades and decades. And that's because it works. And I think the proof is in the pudding yet again this year. While people are seeing both gains in equities and gains in bonds or fixed income, and if the Federal Reserve's job is getting closer to an end, those bond investors might just be rewarded this year for having some interest rate and duration exposure inside their portfolios.
But if I lock in 4 or 5%, I'm also locking in inflation, right? I mean, inflation is higher than that. So this rosy picture you're painting is promising me I'm going to lose 2%, right?
Well, I think that's the exact reason no one was excited, and I think that's the exact reason no one should put all of their money into Treasury bills. No one should put all of their money into bonds. Yeah. Everybody needs to still find a way to beat the silent killer, which, by the way, is not hypertension. You can take drugs for that. The silent killer in retirement is inflation. And to your point, I was encouraged by last week's data. I love the PCE that came out on Friday. The inflation data, it was encouraging to continue to see it work its way down. But I'll feel a heck of a lot better if we put together a couple additional months of dropping inflation, because it's still too high for me.
And now that I think about that, so inflation, say inflation is 6%, you're getting 4%. You're not actually realizing the loss, as I just put it, unless you're using that money to buy goods or services. And maybe you're not. Maybe that's just sitting there in a bond. And in fact, you don't use that money. Inflation does come down at some point, and then you're in the driver's seat, right?
I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I think it's as simple as you first painted it. You know, I think if inflation is running somewhere between 6 on headline, 5.5 on core, we had a lower PCE, you know, personal consumption expenditure, that's what the Fed looks at. You should just look at your earnings rate compared to that and say, am I beating, losing, or at least keeping up with inflation? I just think bringing it back, it's nice that people have alternatives. Because again, for 15 years, John, when was the last time you got excited about a money market, a CD, or a treasury bill?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't talked about it on your show, have we? But
no.
Here we are talking about it now, today, Monday, April 3rd. So I think it shows how far we've come and some of the viable alternatives that are there for investors of all shapes and sizes.
What do you think about the next quarter then, Craig? Do you see interest rates? Is the Fed going to raise them another quarter? And what's your projection on the markets?
Well, at least I get to breathe a sigh of relief and say nothing's going to happen in the month of April, because there is no policy meeting. But when we get together in the month of May, if the Fed needed to give us a little dose of additional Tylenol, again, raise rates another quarter of a point, I'm hoping that the Bank Term Funding Program and some of the other structural improvements we've made are going to have the banks out of most of the trouble. But given a choice between raising rates again to fight inflation, I don't want the inflation to be permanent. I'll deal with some economic slowdown because economic slowdowns have always proven to be finite. So if it's my choice, yes, let's go ahead and raise rates again in the month of May. And then we just have to watch and say, is inflation going to drop faster than earnings? And if inflation drops faster than earnings, I think that puts us in a position for a soft landing, and people should continue to stay committed to their long-term investment strategies for 2023.
I had a note from a family member who was looking at their Schwab account, and it was down 20-some percent, and they'd been putting money on the sidelines in a cash Schwab account, wondering if they should start to transfer it into some fund that they hope will rebound, and they were asking me for advice. And I said, I think you're trying to pick the bottom of the market, and the only thing I know is you can't do that. What would you say to the people that are in that situation I just described?
Well, I think for investors, you're exactly right, John. As a long-term investor who has a robust financial plan, let's not worry about timing the markets, and let's have that individual, that family member, that friend, let's have them start dollar cost averaging that money back into their core investment portfolio. For the traders who are out there listening, yes, we stand at the precipice of a fateful number once again, which is anytime we get to or near this 4,100 level on the S&P, we just seem to putter out. We lose out of momentum. So I think from a trader standpoint, we're stuck between 38 and 4,100. But for anybody who's got a time horizon of 5 years or longer, no, we shouldn't be squirreling away new deposits into money markets, even though the yields are better than they've been. We should be committing that into long-term diversified portfolios, just as you suggest.
Craig Bolanos is the co-founder and CEO at Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com. Okay, Craig, we'll call you another day. Thanks for your thoughts.
Great to be back. Thanks, John.
In the next hour, we'll talk a little bit about the voting in Paris on e-scooters. You know, big cities like Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., pick them anymore, medium-sized cities, suburbs. Everybody's got the e-scooters that these companies, that these cities, contracts these cities let out to various businesses. And now they've all got scooter issues. And in Paris, they voted on whether or not they should continue to have e-scooters in their city. I wonder if Chicago will take a lesson from that after 1 o'clock. Now, that sounds like something up your alley. It's kind of technology, right, Jim Dahlke?
Absolutely. We covered the launch of e-scooters, you know, when they first started in Chicago, and it's kind of continued ever since, and our NO sites all across the country. It's, you know, certainly a big issue. Every city takes a slightly different approach. I mean, Chicago clearly wanted to, you know, make clutter less of an issue, right? So we're fixing these to physical objects, but not just strewn about in the sidewalks or on the streets. And so, you know, obviously COVID played a major role in the e-scooter industry. I mean, if you look at the stock price of a lot of these publicly traded e-scooter companies, things have not gone well. It was a big piece of the daily commute for folks who were going downtown, right? So they took the train into the city. Maybe the e-scooter was sort of like the last leg of your transit trip there. Folks who are working remotely or working, you know, from home most of the time no longer need that. So the future of e-scooters will be one to watch. It was certainly a big, big deal when they first launched, and then and COVID kind of threw a wrench into things.
That's a big tourist town as Chicago is Paris. I'm reading from the New York Times, and they said last year 570 people were injured in France on e-scooters, and 34 people were killed. I don't know what our numbers are here, but I don't think they're that high. Speaking of technology, you authored a pretty lengthy piece about artificial intelligence and how it's being used across the country, across all kinds of landscapes. Talk about this a little bit, Jim.
Yeah, you know, we sort of talk, right, every week, John, about the troubles that startups and the tech sector has faced over the last year, year and a half, 2 years. I mean, things have sort of come back down to earth from just the sky-high valuations that we saw in 2021 and this huge influx of funding and growth. That's not the case anymore, but there's one absolutely undeniable bright spot in the startup sector, and that is artificial intelligence. If you've got an artificial intelligence startup, venture capitalists are willing to throw you some money. And especially if you come from a Google or from one of these open AI startups and you're sort of starting something new, venture capitalists want to back you. So it's been an absolutely hot area in the tech sector. And so, yeah, we put together a list of about 35 startups across the U.S. Who are working within artificial intelligence that we think readers should keep their eye on. So everybody knows about OpenAI, of course, as ChatGPT maker. Everybody is kind of aware of those guys. So we wanted to kind of find out, hey, who else is, you know, operating in artificial intelligence, you know, that could be kind of like this next big hit for the tech sector. And so we've got companies all over the U.S. in Chicago. Got a couple examples. One is an ag tech startup. It's really fascinating, called Sabanto. They've created you're using AI to create autonomous tractors. And so the startup says it can create a variety of row crop field operations. It has used tractors to autonomously till, plant, seed, weed, and mow farmland. They've raised about $17 million, including from Johnsonville Ventures, which is the parent company of the sausage maker. It's a big space here nationally, and Chicago companies are getting involved. It's another one that we have on the list here from Chicago called Evozine. They're doing some artificial intelligence to kind of make drugs come to market better. And so, there's a big, big range of use cases for artificial intelligence. Of course, it's a generative AI space, which is what OpenAI is doing. So helping you sort of, you know, put in a prompt and it'll, you know, create, you know, images for you or create text for you, but as well as artificial intelligence and some health tech as well. So really, comprehensive list. I think we put together here. You can check out the whole list at ChicagoNO.com.
Maybe I confused or conflated AI with chat. You know, I mean, I think that's the new thing, right? That it'll write for you or speak for you or create art for you. Some of this that you're describing sounds like GPS or just powerful computing. Mm-hmm. So what's the intersect here?
Yeah, I mean, AI is certainly a wide net, but I think what's definitely gaining traction right now is we kind of call this generative AI. So, you know, sort of taking these prompts that you put together and creating text, creating images, creating videos, right, just from a simple text prompt. And that's what, of course, OpenAI is working on. But there's a lot of other companies that are doing this too. And a lot of them have actually a B2B focus. So there's a company out of Austin, Texas called Jasper. They've raised over $131 million. Having only been alive for a couple of years, what they're doing is sort of similar AI, generative AI technology, but for marketing. So, you know, help thinking, you know, creating blog content, social media posts, ad copy. This is kind of really simplifying things for marketers and like really kind of bringing some tools, you know, to marketers that they never had before. Other companies are working on, you know, coding, for example. So rather than having to write code manually, you know, you can use this sort of generative AI technology to create, you know, code much, much faster and more efficiently than ever before. So I think, you know, obviously OpenAI has kind of opened this up to consumers, but there's a big business element here too, where a lot of companies are going to be adopting these generative AI tools to make work easier.
Saw a story this morning about how political flyers and persuasive pieces are now being handed over to AI. Just say, okay, describe why my platform is good for crime or business. And then the chatbot generates that, could even insert photos, relative images. And if it's a reminder if nothing else, Jim, how efficiently these things can be used, right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, this is not totally a replacement of humans, right? The human still has to be there to fine tune it, right? So what this is able to do is kind of give you a good working template, and then, you know, a person can come in, you know, fact check some of the issues that have been there, sort of formulate it exactly how they want to and get it set. And so really the idea is not that, hey, this generative AI, at least at this point, it's not totally replacing, you know, the human that's involved here, but it's giving you a nice head start. And then where the human can kind of come in at the end, put the finishing touches on and put a bow on things. So, I think we're still a ways away from the generative AI, just sort of totally letting it go and doing its own thing and sort of trusting it without kind of coming in over the top and say, hey, let's just make sure everything looks good. So, you know, that future may be coming, but I think for now, humans are still a big piece of this.
Give me the headline on this biotech VC firm.
Yeah, Portal Innovations, really impactful biotech VC firm and lab space here in Chicago, led by John Flavin. You know, this is a group that has really kind of championed, you know, biotech growth in the city, and it's done a really nice job. They've invested in a lot of local biotech, hit startups here in town. And they are expanding to Boston, so moving, in growing their practice, growing into Boston as well. So they're going to be investing in startups in Boston and also providing them lab space. They've got about 22,000 square feet of lab and office space in Southline, Boston. So big moves for them. Boston, obviously a huge, huge biotech hub. And hey, this is only going to, you know, create more connections for Chicago, giving Chicago startups another lifeline to a big major biotech hub. So a good expansion for Portal Innovations and good news for local biotech startups here in the city.
We got to go, but I'm just looking at a news scroll on TV. ChatGPT temporarily disabled in Italy. Italy, the first country to ban ChatGPT. Do you have any idea why they're doing that?
Yeah, from what I understand, it's privacy concerns. I mean, we'll see, right? I mean, I think that the government regulations are going to start to play a big factor here for this company, both, you know, locally here and around the world. So, I mean, I think that they've got a lot of hoops to jump through. And I think, you know, but by and large, you know, the American public and, you know, public at large is still trying to get used to this and trying to make sense of it and try to understand the power of it too, right? So I would expect that they're going to have plenty of legal hurdles to jump through as they continue to grow.
Jim Dahlke, national editor, American Inno. You can read more at chicagoinno.com. Nice to talk to you, Jim. As always, thank you.
Thanks, John.
More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's has shut down its U.S. offices this week as it begins to inform corporate employees about layoffs and reassignments. The Chicago-based company has told employees to work from home starting today so it can deliver staffing decisions virtually. Employees were told to cancel all in-person meetings at its headquarters. It's unclear how many employees will be laid off. Other workers could be moved to new positions and their teams reorganized. It's part of a larger McDonald's reorganization. Chicago's Archer Daniels Midland is considering pulling back its operations in Russia. Bloomberg reports ADM is reviewing its 50% stake in a joint venture with Russian partner Aston. The partnership was launched in 2018 and processes corn to produce sweeteners and starches for the Russian food and beverage industry. If it decides to pull back, ADM would join other Western companies in distancing themselves from Russia following its invasion of Ukraine. Russia is the world's top wheat exporter. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food and Steve Alexander.
Yes, and look who's back again this year.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic
tomato grower
the world has ever known.
Chicago Tomato Man!
And we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Hello.
Is the Chicago Tomato Man?
Yes, it is. My name is Bob Zini.
How did you become Chicago Tomato Man?
I was always interested in gardening. I'm self-employed as a graphic designer, and I work out of my house. The isolation got kind of odd, so I tried heavy drinking.
He's kidding about that part.
My wife,
Wendy,
suggested that I start plants in the basement.
Tomato plants, heirlooms.
They were tasty, and the more I learned, the more I wanted to grow other varieties.
He started sharing with neighbors and friends, and
they told other people, and people wanted to buy them. One thing led to another, and here we are.
And where we are is year 10 of Bob selling coveted tomato plants. His first batch of 5,000 sold out in a hurry, so he's giving you another chance to order with a second planting.
To celebrate National Tomato Day this Thursday.
That's when you can order at
ChicagoTomatoMan.com.
His tomatoes are not the run-of-the-mill varieties you find piled up in grocery stores.
Those tasteless travesties.
Bob raises only heirloom tomatoes, which doesn't mean they're old. It's just a reference to how they're bred.
So you can have new heirlooms. Tasty and colorful, durable.
He's planting more than 100 varieties, $6 to $10 a plant. They'll be ready in May, and he gives a lot of the profit away, including to a group called the Gardeneers.
And what they do is build gardens and work with students in neighborhoods where access to fresh fruit is very limited.
And also to
the Ginkgo Garden, which is a community garden that donates all of their
harvest to food banks in Uptown.
Bob Zini, the
Chicago Tomato Man.
I hope everybody is having fun with this. I know I just really enjoy it.
Apologies to the late Dick Orkin and anybody involved in Chicken Man. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
April is here, and that means it's tax month and season, and maybe all the more reason to bone up on our financial literacy. In fact, it's Financial Literacy Month. Ray Martinez is the co-founder and president of EverFi, which endeavors to get financial literacy classes in front of K through 12 students. Hey, Ray, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, John.
So this is a national effort. How many states require some sort of financial literacy for kids?
Well, today, John, you have 15 states that have a standalone requirement around financial literacy. You have upwards of 40 states that will have some type of recommended requirement or learning unit around topics such as savings, budgeting, understanding your credit score, needs versus wants. But you know, our point of view on this is that when you pass a requirement, that's going to mean that every student, before they leave and enter the workforce or start their career or start their own business, enter the armed forces, or go to college, they're going to leave high school with some type of financial literacy and personal finance under their belt, which we think is critically important as we've traveled the country over the last 15 years, working with over 35,000 public schools across the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico. When you talk to young people, you talk to teachers, this is a topic that everyone wants to learn about.
Well, so is it taught as a semester-long class by a teacher or just woven into some other curriculum?
Just as an example, just in the past couple weeks, you've had Florida, Michigan, and Ohio. Those three states have passed a standalone requirement. So what that will mean is that students in those states will take a semester or a full year course on financial literacy.
Wow.
The other states have recommended learning units where they would be embedded into, let's say, an economics class or a math class or career and technical education class. The challenge with that is that you're oftentimes not reaching the entire student population. And what research has shown is that we need to start younger, John. Like, high school is actually a little too late. We really need to be starting this topic in schools at about the age of 13. So think of middle school students where kids are going through what's called financial socialization. They're developing their norms, their values, their relationships with money. That's a perfect time to intervene. And this topic, you know, as you know, you don't master money. You know, it's a lifelong journey, but having multiple interventions, multiple points in your education where you can get access to this information, access to this knowledge, is really important.
Okay, so in Illinois, House Bill 1375 is a proposal to do just this. State lawmakers want to require financial literacy for us here in Illinois. They're talking about it in Springfield. I'm out of time right now, but can you just give me your headline on that? Do you like the sound of this bill?
I think it's a great opportunity to make sure we're teaching kids how to save, how to budget, how to prepare for their future. The financial services system is moving so fast, yet education and our ability to educate not only students and their families, we can do that using technology. We can do it in a way that doesn't cost the taxpayers in Illinois a dime to do it. We can get the private sector involved. Yeah. We can get amazing nonprofits involved. That's the opportunity.
That's good to hear. That's Ray Martinez, co-founder and president of EverFi. Thank you for your time, Ray. And by the way, the bill as drafted would have created or would create a standalone course. There's also a proposal in Springfield to teach kids over the entirety of their high school career, 9th through 12th grades. So we'll keep everybody posted on that. And Ray, you keep doing what you're doing.